Welcome to Hour 2 of the Truth with Sherwin Hughes. We are analyzing, deciphering, and trying to sort through what the hell happened. Congratulations to Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley. He is the Democratic nominee for governor in the state of Wisconsin. The contest against Republican Tom Tiffany is slated for November 3rd. There's about 84 days between now and that contest. Kelda Roy's may have been the difference. The Wisconsin Democratic gubernatorial primary ended with an extraordinarily narrow result. David Crowley defeated Francesca Hong by about only 3,200 votes, while Kelda Roy's received roughly 59,000 votes statewide. So I'm going to go through the detail that will thoroughly explain in a very convincing manner that Kelda staying in this race did the most damage to a single candidate, and that was Francesca Hong. Kelda received 59,000 votes statewide. Crowley finished at about 39.8%, Hong at 39.4%, and Kelda Roy's at about 7.5%. This creates a very simple question. If Kelda Roy's had not been on the ballot, where would those 59,000 voters have gone? Now, we cannot know for certain, but there are several reasons to take the, quote, Roy's was the spoiler argument. And so I'm bringing this up because I hope that some really talented, really smart journalist, whether locally, statewide, or nationally, picks this story up because it is fascinating once I delved into the numbers. I didn't get a lot of sleep last night. I was up late because the city of Milwaukee had a bad flash drive guy. I'm sleepy. And I wake up and I got all these text messages. When I went to bed, I didn't know who won the damn race. But then I saw all the unread text messages that I had. I was like, uh-oh. I've been looking at numbers all morning. So I'm going a little crazy because I've been looking at numbers. I've been doing the mathematics. Case in point, why our children need educational options and need to be on grade level in math, because if our children that go to Milwaukee public schools are not on grade level in math and 90% of them are not, they're not going to be able to decipher a goddamn election. I need to have a political science degree in mathematicians and mathematicals and statistics, statisticians. I got to be an actuarial scientist. Royce had 20 times the votes necessary to change the result. Crowley beat Hong by approximately 3,200 votes. Royce received approximately 59,000 votes. Hong therefore needed only 5% of Kelda Roy's voters to switch to erase Crowley's statewide lead. So 5% of Kelda's voters, and if you ask Kelda supporters who their number two choice is, it's Francesca. Remember, they represent the exact same area. Kelda is the senator in the area in Madison where Francesca is the assembly representative, meaning Francesca's assembly district sits inside of Kelda's Senate district. It's literally the same voters. But also, I want to give you the vote totals at the countywide level from Dane County. David Crowley was exceptionally competitive. He was more competitive in Dane County. He should have gotten completely evaporated in Dane County. Like, it should have been somewhere around 65-35 or at least 60-40. Francesca Hong only got 44% of the Dane County vote. David Crowley got 36%. But here's the important part. Other candidates that were on the ballot got 19.3%. Let's assume that those other candidates decided they were going to drop out of the race, or in the case of Mandela Barnes, let's say they never got in the first place. It's realistic to believe that 20% of Dane County voters that voted for other candidates would have gone to Francesca, and there's her 60-40 margin that she would have needed to win. So she had so many more pathways to victory, but they closed because of all of the other candidates that were on the ballot. And so I had said some time ago when we had 33-34% of undecided voters, they were looking for a reason to support someone other than Francesca. I think that part is actually accurate. If there was anything that was correct about the polling that we saw, the number of undecided voters. Because if you're a Francesca Hong supporter, and you probably still are today, you were never undecided. You weren't thinking, Franny or Joel Brennan. That probably never came into their minds. They were going to support her, period, hands down, point blank, regardless of who else was in the race. Milwaukee County, Francesca Hong was more competitive in Milwaukee County than she should have been, right? She did better in Milwaukee County, which is a big no-no, and this is what a lot of us were noticing. We didn't really see any momentum. We didn't really see any excitement here in Milwaukee County, and maybe there was an assumption made on behalf of the Crowley campaign, because there is a coalition of people that live and vote in Milwaukee County, particularly in the city. If on my Twitter, I posted a heat map, the votes and the strength of the vote for David Crowley mimics the segregation of the city of Milwaukee. And as you move away from the north side and into suburban communities, you see David Crowley's vote share get lighter and lighter because the map is color-coded. And then once you get to some North Shore suburbs and some more liberal parts of the city of Milwaukee, keep in mind the east side of the city of Milwaukee, the third aldermanic district is represented by Alex Brower. Alex Brower is a Democratic Socialist. So you can literally have the third aldermanic district that is represented by Alex Brower, a Democratic Socialist, where Francesca Hong cleaned up. And that's a city of Milwaukee district with a very, very high voter turnout percentage. In fact, the third aldermanic district is the most educated and the most wealthy demographic aldermanic district in the city of Milwaukee. But that is par for the course, because when the DSA of America did a demographic survey of their actual members, it's something like 30% of Democratic Socialists have a master's degree or higher, and another 30% make over $100,000 a year. So I think there might be some misconception that, oh, Democratic Socialists are, you know, these poor working class white folks who are all making minimum wage. It is actually quite the opposite. So I'm not shocked that the whiter and the higher the education level and the higher the income of the voter, the more likely they were to vote for Francesca Hong, which also explains why Alex Brower, a Democratic Socialist, got elected to represent the most educated and the most wealthy aldermanic district in the city of Milwaukee. Francesca Hong got within 2 points of David Crowley, a point and a half of David Crowley in Milwaukee County. David Crowley got 43% of the vote in the county in which he was elected countywide twice. Francesca Hong got 41.5%. So her doing that rally in South Milwaukee, beautiful, beautiful political science. Her texting me and saying, Sherwin, I'm doing doors in your neighborhood and a Francesca Hong yard sign being right across the street from my yard. That's very significant because I live in David Crowley's former assembly district. She campaigned in his backyard and actually performed well. She was on her way to winning this race, but Kelda spoiled it. Let's talk to a very disappointed Francesca Hong supporter. Hello, Dion. How are you this morning?
What's going on, Sherwin? How you doing?
Doing good, man. What's on your mind?
You know what? I feel like, and this is me myself, I don't understand how David dropped out of the election, was real low in the polls, to come back and win. That's confusing. I just feel like it's more behind it than just that, though. It doesn't sit well with me, though. You feel what I'm saying? Like, don't get me wrong. I wasn't, you know, a Franny Panny like you call her. You know what I'm saying? Like, oh, God.
Not Franny Panny, even though I like that. It's Franny Pants.
You know? Oh, Franny Pants. Okay. I wasn't, like, gung-ho for her. Like, oh, my God. You know what I'm saying? Like I said, like I told you when I called you on your personal phone. You know what I'm saying? It's not, I wasn't familiar with too many other people that voted. You know, I just wanted to go for her. You know what I'm saying? The reason I felt like David Crowley had a weak election because he dropped out and then came back. And it's just suspicious to me because that's just like if you actually run in a race, a marathon or something, then you stop, then you rest, and then people are ahead of you. And all of a sudden you just come back and win. It's like, it just don't sit well with me, though. But, you know, it is what it is, though. But, you know, I'm not going to vote for Tom Tiffany. But to be honest with you, and this is truly honest, I don't think that David Crowley's going to win the gubernatorial election. I think we're going to have another wacko up in there. You know, we might as well get old Scott Walker back. At least we know what he's capable of, you know. But It was disappointing though, but you know I'm gonna hang up and listen because I'm about to go pick my food up real quick because I snuck out to school real quick and I can't get caught. So I'm about to go pick my food up, but I just wanted to make that comment. God, I can't stand these people. But yeah, I just wanted to make that comment, so I'm gonna hang up and listen.
All right. Thank you for your call. Dude is disappointed that he'll vote for Tom Tiffany. I can already tell. Roy has had almost 20 times the votes necessary to change the ultimate result. Crowley beat Hong by approximately 3,200 votes. Roy's received approximately 59,000 votes. Hong therefore needed only 5% of Kelda Roy's supporters to switch to erase Crowley's statewide advantage. In other words, 95 out of 100 Roy's voters could have stayed with Crowley or gone somewhere else, and Hong still would have won if roughly 5 out of every 100 Roy's voters had moved to her. The final State Navigate poll asked voters who supported each candidate for their second choice. Among Senator Kelda Roy's supporters, 34% chose Francesca Hong as their second choice. 29% chose David Crowley. So, Roy's voters were actually more inclined toward Hong than Crowley when asked their second preference. Apply that 5-point difference to roughly 59,000 Roy's voters. 5% of 59,000 is approximately 2,950 votes. Crowley's margin, 3,200. That is remarkably close. It doesn't prove that Roy's cost Hong the election, but it does demonstrate that the size and ideological direction of the Kelda Roy's vote were large enough to plausibly determine the winner. Now let's look at the counties. Dane County is the biggest piece of evidence for the Roy's-Hong overlap. Dane County is where both Hong and Roy's had their strongest natural constituency. Both are Madison area legislators. Roy's political base is in Madison, and Hong's strongest ideological and geographic base is also in Madison and Dane County. Wisconsin Public Radio described Hong as occupying the progressive lane in Roy's home city, while noting that Roy's was also competing for the exact same progressive constituents. Here's the important point. Hong won Dane County, but not by the kind of margin that she needed. Early election night data showed Hong around 41% in Dane County to Crowley's 38, a much narrower victory than many observers expected. That matters enormously. Dane County was supposed to be Hong's firewall. If you're Francesca Hong, you don't merely need to win Dane County. You need to crush Crowley there. Why? Because Crowley has an enormous structural advantage in Milwaukee County. Milwaukee County is the other half of the equation. Crowley's home county was always going to be crucial. He is the Milwaukee County executive, and Milwaukee County is Wisconsin's largest county and one of the most important Democratic vote reservoirs in the state. The Associated Press specifically identified Milwaukee and Dane as the two counties most likely to be decisive in this primary election. So think of it this way. Hong needed a huge Dane County margin plus competitive Milwaukee performance. Crowley needed to maximize Milwaukee plus prevent Hong from running away with Madison and the progressive counties. And that's essentially what happened. Crowley managed to prevent Hong from building the enormous Dane County advantage that she needed. But here's where Kelda becomes the spoiler. Roy's candidacy wasn't just taking votes from some random parts of the electorate. She was competing for the exact same votes Francesca Hong needed. Think of the Democratic electorate as in three big buckets. Bucket number one, Crowley voters, moderate Democrats, Milwaukee establishment voters, voters focused on electability and executive experience. Bucket number two, Francesca Hong voters, progressives, Democratic socialists, younger voters, Madison liberals, and voters attracted to Hong's more aggressive economic and social agenda. Bucket number three, Senator Kelda Roy's voters, progressive Democrats, particularly Madison area voters who wanted a liberal candidate but weren't necessarily committed to Hong. That third bucket is the fascinating one, as Royce and Hong were essentially competing for a portion of the same progressive electorate. And Royce remained in the race all the way to election day. Imagine two people are trying to win a pie-eating contest, and there's a third person eating pieces of the same pie. I like pie. Hong and Royce were competing for some of the same progressive voters. Crowley didn't necessarily have to convince every progressive voter to support him. He simply had to prevent Hong from consolidating the progressive vote. And because Crowley won by 3,200 votes, while Kelda Royce received 59,000, the Royce vote was large enough to potentially have changed the outcome of this election. We're listening to The Truth with Sherwin Hughes, doing a little election recap where an improbable victory took place last night by the narrowest of margins, about 0.4%. But let me just take a moment. Can I shout out my boy? I think it's time I shout my boy out. Yiling Zhong won the Democratic primary for state treasurer as the party looks to reclaim the state constitutional office held by Republicans. Shout out to my boy. Man, come on, man. Come on, Yiling Zhong. He spent all his money on 101.7 The Truth. He was like, I'm going to get these blacks. I'm going to spend. I'm going to support black radio. I ain't never met this dude a day in my life, but I like him so very much. And he won with damn near 60% of the vote. Let me tell you why. You advertise on 101.7 The Truth, you can get elected president. Hell yeah. Listen, let me tell you something. The listeners of 101.7 The Truth are such a strong contingent of voters. If you advertise here, you could win president of Canada. You can win president of Venezuela. Never know. You might have a Venezuelan presidential contest battle it out on our airwaves. Hello. My name is Edward Mercado. I'm running for the president of Venezuela. Please, 101.7 The Truth. Vote for me. You might hear it. Yiling Zhong won the Democratic primary for state treasurer as the party looks to reclaim the only state constitutional office held by Republicans. Shout out to my man. You know, I like the Hmongs. I like them. They're very small people. They're not big. They're not in the basketball leagues. They're not. I don't know what sport they play, but whatever. I'll go support a Hmong sports team. I'll go. I'll wear the uniform. I like them very much a lot. Shout out to, I guess, treasurer-elect or treasurer nominee Yiling Zhong, who gets almost 60% of the vote last night. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes will be right back.
The Truth with Sherwin Hughes returns after this on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com. You are listening to The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.
Dane County, the strongest evidence of the Hong-Royce overlap. It is the most important county for the spoiler argument that Kelda Royce staying in the race, took the advantage away from Francesca Hong. Hong and Royce both had strong Madison area constituencies. So they split Dane County, which there probably should have been more emphasis on that while we were all handicapping and editorializing this election. I think there was. I'm sure I mentioned it at some point in time. Hell, I talked about every possible scenario under the sun. David Crowley, he shouldn't have split Milwaukee with anyone, but he split it with the most unlikely candidate. He split it with Francesca Hong instead of splitting it with, you would think Mandela would have done better. I think Sarah Rodriguez actually got more votes than Mandela did. And she dropped out first. But Milwaukee was not competitive for even Joel Brennan, who's been a known commodity in the downtown business community here in Milwaukee. He's born and raised here, from here. His family is here. He did serve in the Evers administration, essentially as Tony Evers' top deputy, because when you lead the Department of Administration for state government, like that's a really heavy-hitting position. It also shows that at least at one point in time, Tony Evers had a tremendous, tremendous amount of confidence in Joel Brennan. So when I interviewed Joel, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago, and I asked him, was he upset that Governor Evers endorsed David Crowley? Joel got real mad. He got white guy mad. It's like, frick yeah, I'm mad, Sherwin. Why did he endorse Crowley? But Joel wasn't competitive here. Francesca was. I want to go back to the county level results here, because this makes like no sense whatsoever that Francesca Hong was within 1.5 percentage points. David Crowley got 65,131 votes in his home county, and Francesca Hong got 62,739. He got 43% of the vote. She got 41.5. My conventional wisdom would have told me, even considering how insane this race was, that David would get at least 50% of the voters in Milwaukee County. He did not. 41.5% of Milwaukee County voters went to her, but here's something else that's probably significant. 15.5% of Milwaukee County voters went to other candidates. So other candidates got 23,471 votes. Something needs to be said for the number of candidates that not only got in the race, but they refused to drop out. I think that was a horrible, horrible mistake, because in 2022, when Mandela ran for the U.S. Senate, we had not quite as crowded a primary to see who the Democratic nominee was going to be to run against Ron Johnson. But the field was cleared. All those other Democrats all dropped out at the exact same time, quite honestly, damn near on the same day, so they could clear the field for Mandela to give him the best shot at beating Ron Johnson, because that's how high of a priority that was, and Mandela lost that. So him getting back into this race, and especially getting in like 2, if not 3 months after David Crowley launched his campaign, should be seen as blasphemy. Now, in a conversation that I had last night offline, Mandela's political career is done. I think it's finished. It should be anyway. Like, there's no reason for him to want to run statewide. Like, he could run for the school board in Crawford County. What's that one county where it was only right here? I'm sorry, Florence County, where David Crowley got 123 votes and Francesca Hong got 122. But even in Florence County, 75 votes went to other candidates. In fact, in Florence County, Kelda Roy's got 9.4%, Sarah Rodriguez got 5.6%, Mandela Barnes got 4.4%, and the rest of the field split 4.1%. That is crazy. In Florence County, one vote decided the direction of that county. So if Mandela was to run, he can go run somewhere like that. But as far as running for statewide office, he's finished. Because he made a wonderful mess of things. And one of the remarks that I had made pretty consistently through this whole election cycle is we've been in this mess because of Mandela Barnes. And I know some of y'all like him very much and you think he's a great guy. I'm not taking anything away from him personally. I mean, he did have a situation with the hoes, right? He had hoes. Some of his hoes, you know, but he's a single man. Single men got hoes. But apparently, even when you're running as a liberal in the most progressive political party that we have, or at least the most progressive of the two major parties, you would think that people would be okay with you having hoes. But Mandela, I guess he had a few too many hoes. Maybe there's a hoe threshold. Maybe you can't. Maybe you can have 3 hoes, but 4 hoes is, oh, no, not 4 hoes. So I believe that his statewide political aspirations should be diminished. There's a whole bunch of other things that Mandela can do. It's been proven that he has been a spoiler in ways that have not put the Democrats in an advantage position. Losing to Ron Johnson, leaving his position as lieutenant governor to even challenge Ron Johnson in the first place. All Mandela had to do was not even take the risk and run for Senate, and he would have remained lieutenant governor. I firmly believe that Mandela would have been reelected as lieutenant governor. Then guess what? Tony Evers in 2025 says, hey, I'm not running again. And then, boom, Mandela is the heir apparent. There's not even going to be a Democratic primary. When you have an heir apparent, a two-term lieutenant governor, is just assumed that the entire establishment, the entire apparatus, would then put their support behind Mandela Barnes, because think about what you have. You have someone who had been elected and reelected statewide twice. That is the kind of advantage, that is the name identification that you need to challenge any Republican that you might be facing. But he mortgaged his future on a gamble that did not pay off. Now, the biggest, I guess, asterisk in all of that, so Mandela steps down from being lieutenant governor, or he doesn't run for reelection, runs for Senate and loses. That's when we get Sarah Rodriguez. And one of the things that will be noted in the history of this election, because this was going to be talked about for a very, very long time, is that we wouldn't even have gotten Sarah Rodriguez as lieutenant governor had Mandela just run for reelection to lieutenant governor and not run for the U.S. Senate. And Sarah Rodriguez's impact in this campaign is monumental. The miscommunication or the mismanagement of her campaign finance reports is the story. That and Kelda being a spoiler for Francesca, because Kelda took just enough progressive voters away from Francesca in liberal Dane County to where Francesca could not unilaterally run up the score in her own backyard. Because if you look at how competitive Francesca was in Milwaukee County, there's no way she should have been within 1.5 points of David Crowley's vote total in the county that elected and reelected David Crowley. So her campaign strategy to campaign in Milwaukee, whether it be doing doors in a black community or doing a pretty big rally in South Milwaukee, like that worked out beautifully for her. It's just Kelda took away her vote totals in her home district. I also got some information yesterday that, so we had a state Supreme Court race in April of this year, I'm assuming, right? I think so. So Dane County, or Kel, not, it was, I'm sorry, Francesca's assembly district, because we wanted to look at how they were performing. So in Francesca's backyard, in the assembly district that she represents, what were her voters doing? So get this, by 11 o'clock yesterday morning, okay, 11 a.m., 24,000 votes had been cast in Francesca Hong's district. We're talking with 8 more hours of the polls being open, 24,000 people had already voted, right? So when we got those numbers, conventional wisdom told us, like, oh, man, Fran is cleaning up in her district, which she should and which she had to. But it was shocking to see that that many people in her assembly district had already voted by 11 a.m. I'll give you a little point of reference here. In the Supreme Court race that was statewide in April, only 20,000 people had voted in Francesca's district by 11 a.m. So 4,000 more people voted in the Democratic primary for governor out of Francesca's assembly district yesterday than they did in April in a damn general election. Like, that is, when I saw that, I was like, uh-oh. And then I looked at the fact that Milwaukee had only cast 28,000 early votes altogether. I was like, oh, well, that's the margin right there. Holy smokes, were we wrong. Hong needed Madison to be a fortress. Instead, she won it. But Crowley kept the damage manageable. Number two, Milwaukee County, Crowley's firewall. This is where Crowley's coalition mattered most. He entered the race as Milwaukee County executive and had the advantage of an established, there's that establishment word, political organization and substantial familiarity in the state's largest Democratic county. So I'm going to take a break, come back, give you a few more takeaways. But also, shall we discuss this boogeyman? This evildoer that lurks in the Democratic side of politics, the establishment. Is the establishment something to be frowned upon? Are they the problem? Are they the reason why so many progressives are anti-establishment and why the label of establishment is not necessarily a good thing? Like, nobody should walk around wearing a T-shirt saying they're establishment. Has the establishment been unfairly demonized? Because we're going to have to sort all this out if you guys want and expect the desired result come April. I'm sorry, November 3rd. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 FM. We'll be back shortly.
The Truth with Sherwin Hughes returns after this on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com. You are listening to The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.
question that came in via the YouTube chat directed at me. Sherwin, the biggest challenge for Crowley is what will he do for the black men slash youth in Milwaukee? What the hell can he do? If you are an executive, governor of the state of Wisconsin, you can sign legislation passed by the assembly and the Senate. You can veto legislation passed by the assembly and the Senate, which they can go back and override. And you can get very creative in crafting our biennial budgets, which can direct funding to different places, spaces, organizations, etc. To answer that question, because I don't want anyone to think that black men and black boys are just lowly, shiftless, and completely helpless, because when you think about it, there's not a lot of impact that you can have on that boy's family, on his abusive mama, and his incarcerated father. There's a lot of times the die has already been cast, and some people we're just not going to be able to save, and I wish that there was a more profound understanding of that, because I think that we realize how we may have failed people in our community, but that's the community failing other people. We can't then say, oh no, we failed all these children. We weren't there for them. We didn't protect them. We allowed for their abuse and we turned a blind eye to it and then say, hey government, come help these people. It is never going to work like that. And some of the most successful communities that you will see anywhere will not turn a blind eye to the needs and the futures of their children, nor will they expect the government to have the solution. It's very, very difficult for African Americans because we may see things happening to children that are negatively impacting them. But here's what I would challenge you to do. Let's say you see a parent that's not parenting very well. Go ahead and tell that mama she's doing a bad job. No, I'll wait. No, I'll watch. I'll get my camera out while you go tell this mother that she is creating a toxic and poisonous, unproductive environment for her son. And then I'll do you one better. Then tell that mother to, when that child gets home from school, that they sit down at the kitchen table and they do the homework together, and then the mother spends 2 hours a night reading to the child, and the child can't have any screen time because they're going to have reading time. You go ahead and suggest that to that mother. Go ahead. The problem is, I think that we have resigned to the fact that we don't have any influence on one another, because there are so many positive examples of what black people can do, what they can be, and our accomplishments, but they're not penetrating. The other thing that we have to worry about is the number of very talented African Americans, very creative, your entrepreneurs, people that would make great stewards on behalf of the public, like people that would be great candidates for political office. They don't stay here. They go to where their talents can be better recognized. And some of that is just the unintended or maybe intended consequence of being a hyper minority in a state like Wisconsin. African Americans are only 4% of the state's population. Now, you can look at that one of two ways. Because the population of African Americans is so small, the overall investment of resources in that very small population can go a long way. I would argue, what the hell do you do about suffering white people? Because they are 80% of the population, but 84% of the voters. Arguably, there are probably more poor white people in any collection of 4 or 5 counties than there are black people in the entire state of Wisconsin. But also keeping in mind, and this is something that I thought would be working against David Crowley, but it also shows this duplicity and the dichotomy of the Wisconsin voter. The Wisconsin voter is exceptionally schizophrenic. The Wisconsin voter is off of its meds. You didn't take your Thorazine or whatever you people take. You didn't take it. Because how do you have a liberally, democratically elected Supreme Court take away a minority scholarship? And they're soon to make unconstitutional a supplier diversity program where 5% of the state's contracts go to minority-owned businesses. That's going to be made illegal because they look at race. And anything that looks at race, even if it's been demonstrated that one race was discriminated, wanting to make up for that past discrimination by putting a damn 5% preference on contracts, that's going to be unconstitutional as well. And also, you have a referendum on the ballot on November 3rd that will make, like, David Crowley's story is admired by many of how he came up from, you know, very humble beginnings. And I'm being diplomatic when I say that, to reach damn near the highest level of electoral politics in the state of Wisconsin. I'd imagine somewhere along the way, there were some opportunities. There was some desire for more diversity, equity, and inclusion. Maybe there was some benefit that he received. Maybe something along the way that helped smooth the roughness of the road that was the one that he took to his path to success. There's going to be a question on the ballot that is going to take all of that away. At the same time, Wisconsin voters chose an African-American man in a state that is 80% white, that is also the worst, one of the absolute worst states for black children to get an education and for black families to be successful. That is a kind of duplicity that I don't know if you can explain with just regular conventional wisdom. I've always had a very healthy mistrust of Caucasian voters, and I say that because why wouldn't they put their social and political interests first? You're supposed to. Now, here's the weird thing about that. When white people put their interests first, because I think that white people, like, really care about their communities and their families, but when they do so, we as black people find it racist. It's almost like we don't want them to walk and chew gum at the same time, because we can be pro-black all day, and people just, they just accept that. But if somebody says, I'm pro-white, hey, you're a racist. Now, we look a little bit beneath the surface because white isn't even really a thing. White is Europeans that shed their identity in favor of being a part of a system that gets to structurally and institutionally discriminate. We get that part. But the climate that we are in, solidified and fortified by the Trump administration, because the better than 200 executive orders that Donald Trump signed his first, I don't know, probably week or two in office, struck right at the heart of all of the civil rights progress that had been made over the past seven decades, including the original executive order signed March 9th, 1961, by then President John Fitzgerald Kennedy, creating affirmative action. We must take affirmative action to ensure that all Americans have jobs and opportunities within the federal government, because the way Kennedy saw it, if black people are citizens of this country and they are paying federal income taxes, then black people deserve opportunities in the federal government. How incredibly disrespectful. But that's the heart of what the civil rights movement was. The whole thing with Rosa Parks, some of it was staged, but point well taken. If a black person is paying the same fare as a white person riding the bus, you can't tell that black person where they are supposed to sit because they're paying the same fare. Now, if black people were able to ride public transportation for free, absolutely you can say, hey, you don't have to pay to ride this bus, but here are the free seats. That's totally different. But because we paid the same fare, you, he, she, they, nor the system can dictate where a black person sits. So Rosa was like, I'm going to sit here. And the bus driver was like, oh, no, you're not. I'll pull this bus over. Yes, indeed, I will. And then you know what happened after that. If black people are paying federal income taxes, then the federal government should be open for their employment. How disrespectful to collect federal income taxes from African Americans, but then still bar them from federal employment. And that is what Kennedy did, and that was the birth of affirmative action. Donald Trump took it away. Cancer research by the federal government, which we know has improved and lengthened the lives of African Americans more so than any other demographic group, and the federal government invests in cancer research because this is something that goes back to the Barack Obama administration. A lot of folks who love Barack Obama, we romanticize him. And some of you wish Barack Obama would run again. We don't even understand the most important parts of his legacy. When he gave Joe Biden that the congressional, what did he give him? The Presidential Medal of Freedom. But he also named Joe Biden as the cancer czar, because one of the reasons why Joe Biden did not run for president in 2016, because he was dealing with the death of his son, Beau, who died from cancer. Joe Biden, who we believe has got cancer himself, and that debate that he messed up against Donald Trump, that wasn't because Joe Biden has dementia. That man was going through chemotherapy. We come to find out 2 damn weeks ago. Wish they would have said it then. Well, I guess they couldn't have said it then, because then they should have said, oh, you shouldn't be president if you got the chemos and the cancers. Barack Obama named Joe Biden as the cancer czar, and Joe Biden, when he gets elected in 2020, took cancer funding and cancer research very seriously, so the federal government invested in it. And it improved the lives and extended the lives of African Americans with cancer more than any other demographic group. Donald Trump reduced, if not eliminated, the federal government's investment in cancer research for one reason, and one reason only, because it was improving black people's lives. But the reason why we had those bigger investments in cancer research is because it will improve the lives and the longevity of African Americans. But for some reason, we don't attribute that stuff to Barack Obama nor Joe Biden's legacy. I will stop short of saying that the Democrats have found the Obama coalition, because I think that that is a relic of the past, because Democrats have been searching and failing miserably to put together that Barack Obama coalition that existed in 2008 and 2012. I don't know if we'll ever see that again. And the Democrats have been searching for it. They've been searching for it by talking to rural voters and trying to convert Republican voters. I think that coalition that Democrats have just been stuck in a time warp trying to rebuild is just a figment of their imagination. Thinking that we can rebuild the Obama coalition, because I'm already hearing the similarities now, David Crowley and Obama. Hold on. Not quite. Not the same. But the conditions of America weren't the same either. Donald Trump has so incredibly poisoned the well of the political water in which we drink. I don't know if an Obama coalition could ever form ever again. It's like that guy that was a high school football star, and he ran 3 touchdowns in 1 game against Central in 1974. And he's still talking about it today. Oh, man, I remember back in 74 when I ran 3 touchdowns against Central, and he's still hanging on to this relic of the past. I think Democrats are also stuck in trying to rebuild a coalition that, quite honestly, is a figment of our political imagination. It happened once, doesn't mean it can happen again. And so what happened? I believe that the Democrats became, over time, ineffective because they were chasing a coalition that was so strong, it got an African-American man who's part Kenyan and has a Muslim middle name elected president not once, but twice. Then you can have an entry point for Democratic Socialists, because while Democrats were blind and trying to put together a coalition that could only exist at that time for that man in that situation the country was in, they let a lot of opportunities slip through their fingers. Even Hakeem Jeffries is like a remnant or a throwback to the Obama coalition. Like the way he talks and the way he carries himself, like those long pauses, that's theater. You know who else is a throwback to the Obama coalition? Listen very closely to Mayor Cavalier Johnson when he talks. He don't channel Obama, but I think that's also the influence of Barack Obama. Hey, look, I've known David Crowley for 25 years in Milwaukee. I'll tell you what, I got to do that long, drawn-out pause with some little quiet stutter. Let me tell you. Look at here, everyone. Look at me. No, down here, Cavalier Johnson. Yeah, here I am. I'll tell you something about David Crowley. I'll tell you what.
I noticed that during the video I shot during the David Crowley rally.
I actually saw that where the mayor introduced Congresswoman Gwen Moore.
Yeah. What did you think of the piece?
I didn't watch all of it, but what I saw was all right.
Oh, you didn't even watch the interviews or anything?
You know, when I spend time on the internet, it's usually self-serving, Xavier. I got to put together shows and find articles. And then I do the YouTube broadcast at night, but I watch a little piece of it. I rarely have time to sit down and watch 20 minutes of anything.
That's fine.
Well, you have it on your YouTube channel, so those that are interested can go to Political, was it Political Voyeur?
Political Voyeur.
On YouTube. There you go. What other kind of voyeuristic stuff you got on there?
It'll just be all political stuff. I got some Tom Tiffany stuff coming up very soon.
Oh, all right. Anything about pegging?
Oh, no. This is all political.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. All right. Just making sure. You're listening to The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back.
Don't touch that dial. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes will be right back on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com. You are listening to The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.
Life's better with American Family Insurance because when you know you're fully protected, your home, your vehicle, and everything you've worked hard to build, you can actually enjoy it, and that's what it's all about. Not stressing the what-ifs, but moving forward with confidence. American Family agents help you get the right coverage in place so you can focus on your family, your goals, and your dreams that you've earned. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly with American Family Insurance. You can get a quote or find an agent at amfam.com. And American Family Insurance is a proud sponsor of The Truth.
We like the breeze, float straight out of our lids. Them, they got boo bodies, hard rock Brooklyn kids. Us, floor rush, when they DJ booming classics. You dig the crew on the fattest hip-hop record.
Kelder ruined it. I wonder what that conversation is going to be like. Oh, poor Kelder. Shout out to her because I don't know if you guys were listening that day. I'll assume that you were. I cold called the candidates while I was on air just to see who would respond and who I could get to call into the radio program. I think it was a couple of Fridays ago. I didn't text all of them. I texted Mandela. I texted David. I texted Kelda and Francesca. I didn't text Joel because he had been on the program so recently that we didn't need to hear from him again. Mandela never got back to me. In fact, I haven't spoken a word to Mandela this entire election cycle. Fine with me. David didn't get back to me. Even though David's press person, Jonathan, contacted me pretty late Monday night, trying to get David on my show yesterday for like a last minute push. And I originally said yes, but then I realized the management here, they say they want 24 hours notice before I have guests in studio. So I was like, I can't have them on because I'm not giving 24 hours notice.
So the hell.
What do you say, Xavier?
You know me, I'm a rule breaker, so to hell with the rules.
Yeah, there's rules that I'm absolutely going to break, so when I break the ones, I want them to count for something. That's just, and also, I thought that not only was it too little too late, but that's been the whole motto of the campaign. Everything has been too little too late, but like, shout out to procrastinators, you know what I mean? Because usually people are talking down to procrastinators. If you're running for governor, doing stuff at the last minute, that might be your saving grace. And I also was thinking, like, what am I going to say to David? What am I going to ask him that I haven't asked him already? He's been elected and reelected county executive. He served in the state legislature for a couple of terms. We know the dude. People's minds around here were already made up. And plus, what the hell was he going to say? So I just said, nah, I'm not going to break the rules and have David on. Maybe I probably should have. You know what I mean? Maybe I should have just snuck him in here just to see what he was going to say on election day, knowing that with hindsight being 2020. So I texted Mandela that day. I was cold texting the candidates. Mandela didn't reply. David didn't reply. It's like when I reach out to them, you know, they get back to me at their leisure. But, oh, well, Sherwin, can we come on? Can we come on the show? Yeah, when do you want to come on? We're at the front door right now. We're going to come in right now. Kelda responded. And so did Francesca, and we ended up doing brief phone interviews with both of them, which I find very ironic because the two of them, not only are they similar in politics, I think both of them saw an opportunity to take votes from the city of Milwaukee, which absolutely was Francesca's political strategy, and I'm sure that Kelda knew that. Because if you see your number one top competitor, and Francesca Hong and Kelda Royce were competing after the same votes in their home county. And I know that Kelda had been following Francesca's campaign. There was a real cringy, awkward video that Kelda posted. It's an hour-long Facebook video where one of her staff is off camera, and asking her questions about everything from data centers to reproductive health to raising wages and Badger Care for All. Okay, some of you may have seen this video. It's so cringy. There's even a video that Kelly, she did like a TikTok where she's lip syncing Beyonce. I'm like, girl, come on, yo, don't. Just trying to see whatever can stick to the wall. That's so desperate and sad. So there's this video of Kelda in the kitchen. Like she really cooks, but whatever. So she's in the kitchen looking like a homemaker, making spaghetti, and then she's answering a bunch of questions about issues that she probably believes are important to voters. If you haven't seen the video, it's unless she took it down, which I know she probably hasn't. Go to Kelda Roy's Facebook page and go take a look at this video. It's an hour long. Don't watch the whole thing because you'll go nuts. You know how Franny Pants sometimes channels Rosie the Riveter? Like she wears like her jumpsuit and she'll have the bandana in her hair. And you might see a bunch of pictures of when Francesca Hong was working in the restaurant. The way she ties her hair back with that bandana, that's like her signature style, right? If I see that style, I'm thinking, oh, Franny Pants, because she does the bandana in the hair. You know that Kelda did the exact same thing in that video? And Kelda's also cooking. She's in the kitchen. It was almost like she was mimicking Francesca's style in order to court Francesca's voters. It was just so weird and awkward. Kelda's cooking in the kitchen. Francesca is the chef. Kelda had the bandana in her hair that Francesca often wears. Just a cringeworthy video.
We should have her on and ask her about it.
We ain't having. I'm done talking to people. Talking to nobody else for 2 weeks. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes will be back for hour three.
The Truth with Sherwin Hughes returns after this on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.